Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
And last night's Lakers-Celtics game. The most bizarre thing about that, I'm really not sure. Like, the Celtics rocking the green at home, the Lakers wearing gold in Boston, Kemba Walker having a 28-game losing streak to LeBron James. He was 0-28. Or the Celtics hammering L.A., 139-107. Let me start with the first point. Like, I'm not going to get off my lawn with that jersey thing and go all, you know, back in my day, the Lakers wore purple in Boston. I'm not going to get like that. But every so often, it is pretty weird to see traditional rivals wearing the reverse of their jerseys. But even then, not nearly as bizarre as seeing this Lakers team get run out of the gym on the road the way they were last night, especially against a team that had not been playing well. A team that came in having lost 3 straight and 6 of 8. That 32-point win was the largest regular season win by either team in this rivalry in more than 50 years. In other words, that sort of hospital job just does not happen on either side. And if you didn't watch that game last night, you would see the final that read 139-107, and you'd probably assume that the Lakers never even bothered to get off the bus. But you'd be wrong, because they led 8-0. They jumped on the Celtics early on. They jumped on them only to get outscored by 40 the rest of the way. In other words, they got off the bus, they hit a few shots, and then they thought, we're good. Then they turned around and they got back on the bus. Except they were anything but good. And the Celtics picked a very good time to remember they were the Celtics. Now, speaking of Kemba Walker, who allegedly was 0-28 coming in, had this to say after the fact.
You know, just kind of a reminder of, you know, how good we can really be and how good we really are. And how we were playing, you know, early in the season. That's how we was playing. You know, we had great energy. Pressure the basketball, just having fun, you know, playing with enthusiasm and passion. And we got away from that.
All right, so he breaks his maiden, so to speak, against LeBron. As everybody kept repeating before that game, he went into last night 0-28 against LeBron. I mean, I want to say that's like one of the truly stupid stats I've ever seen in my life. But not because of what you might think. Not because of the number per se. But because of this notion that Kemba Walker was somehow 0-28 versus LeBron. He wasn't. His teams were 0-28 against LeBron's teams. And for the most part, Kemba's teams just weren't that good. So that's not on Kemba. He's not playing one-on-one here, but in many cases during that streak, he may as well have been playing one-on-five here. But I'll give you this. It is still pretty bizarre that any player in the NBA could go 0-28 against any other player. Pretty bizarre that he never stumbled into a single win at any point. But he hadn't, until he and they did last night. And yes, the Celtics had looked like garbage of late. But the team everybody had been waiting on finally showed up again last night. And while they were hitting pretty much everything, the Lakers couldn't make a shot. And they were getting murdered on the glass, and they were getting wrecked in transition. The Celtics, meanwhile, moved the rock, they played with pace, they had 5 guys finish with 16 or more points, they destroyed LA in the process. And because it's LeBron and the Lakers losing to a Celtics team that was struggling, Alvin, thank you. Because it was LeBron and the Lakers and the Celtics were struggling, people are going to freak out now and say the Lakers are overhyped, overrated, not that good. Yeah, maybe you pump the brakes on that just a little bit. It was a blowout, but it's only one game. And they have the ultimate get-right team in the Knicks coming up next. So no need to panic, no need to grip. The Lakers are fine. LeBron reminded everybody of that fact after the beatdown.
I mean, listen, it was just a good old... good old-fashioned butt-whooping, that's all. That's all. They beat us on all facets of the game, from the outside, the interior. Points off turnovers and offensive rebounds was the main ingredients to this ale.
That's it. All the main ingredients and a few extra toppings and a good old-fashioned butt-whooping. And a few more things like Jason Tatum going for 27, 5 and 3. Like Jaylen Brown going for 20 points and 6 assists. And like Jaylen Brown dropping this dunk on LeBron's dome.
New York, Brooklyn, Philly coming up. Jaylen Brown catches, drives left side, elevates over Danny Green and throws it down hard with two hands. And Frank Vogel has to call a timeout. It happened out of nowhere, and it's not the first time tonight the Celtics have caught the Lakers on an inbound.
Excuse me. What you miss here is LeBron James got dunked on. He got his sandwich picked and taken. Take that, the king.
Take that, the king. Cornbread.
Take that, the king.
I feel you. That'll happen. Celtics radio. That'll happen. That'll happen. And when that does happen, of course, everybody on Twitter freaks out. And as always, man, I don't know how many times I have to say this. As always, my policy on guys getting dunked on is it'll happen. If you try to play, it happens to us all. Right, Tig? Am I right, Eldrick?
Happens to us all.
Am I right, Eldrick?
It happens to us all.
See you tomorrow, Big Cat. What time you coming on, Big Cat? See you tomorrow, Big Cat. It happens to us all.
Yeah, it happens.
I've said it before. I'll say it again. If you try to play defense in the NBA, you will get dunked on. It's not a matter of if. It's a matter of when. And if you aren't getting dunked on, that means you're ducking out and trying to avoid getting caught on Twitter, getting dunked on. And that's so much worse. Better to get dunked on and try than to take the coward's way out and avoid being Twitterized.
Cowards.
And no, that dunk does not mean that LeBron is washed. But that doesn't take anything away from Brown and what he did. It was an enormous moment. And as you might imagine, he was feeling pretty good about that moment after the game, and he should.
Take us through the dunk on LeBron.
Just being aggressive and just made a play at the rim. I ain't gonna lie though, it was pretty nice. It was pretty awesome.
You have it on the bucket list for today?
I ain't gonna lie, yeah.
He tried to be mellow. He tried to play it off. He tried to be calm. But then he just came out and he admitted, you know what, that was cool. That felt good. That felt great. That's a bucket thing. And why not? LeBron gets it. Like I said, it happens to us all. The only people it doesn't happen to are those that are not playing defense. So give the Celtics some bleeping credit.
Give them some credit.
They still are not a team with a ton of size, but they showed up big last night. Here are a few other ingredients for a Lakers L. Anthony Davis getting into foul trouble in his return from injury, never getting into any kind of rhythm. JaVale McGee being the team's leading scorer. Don't get it twisted. You know I love JaVale McGee and his game. But if he's your leading scorer for a night on this Lakers team, something either has gone so right or so wrong. And last night it was so wrong. Man, Alvin, you're on your game today. Happens to us all, Van Smack.
Happens to us all.
You know it. You know it, Van Smack.
He got his sandwich picked and taken. Take that, the king.
Alvin. Anyway, before anybody tries to get in on this, one more point. Last night's loss had nothing to do with LeBron taking a helicopter to Springfield, Mass. Before that game to watch his son play. Even if it did, and I don't think it did, but even if it did, even if that loss was entirely due to the fact that LeBron went to watch his son play, I'm fine with it. Not only do I not care, I dig it. Getting a chance to watch your son play in a situation like that is cool. In fact, I'll go as far as to say it's more important than a regular season NBA game in January. Just like it might be the start of something for the Celtics, it's not the end of something for the Lakers. They did not get exposed yesterday. They're not fraudulent. The only people getting exposed because of that loss are the dopes who said the Lakers got exposed. The dopes who said the Lakers lost because LeBron got on a copter to see Bronny play. And no clones. LeBron has not asked YouTube to take down Brown's dunk on him. you know, like you all said that he did with Jordan Crawford's back in the day. Stop. That never happened, and neither did this. And no, he's not going to ask for everybody's phone here either. It's part of basketball. It happens to everybody. Happens to us all. Keep moving.
Happens to us all.
No, he did not ask a waiter to cut his steak for him either. Stop making crap up. Hey, clones, the question of the day. What do we want when we're craving protein or we need more energy? I can tell you what we don't want. We don't want another bar or another sugary snack or another energy drink. No, instead we want beef, pure and simple. So where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your old man's jerky. It's not shriveled. It's not dry. It's not tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender and tasty. It's not tough. What makes it so good? I'm going to say it's the company behind it. Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for their relentless commitment to quality. And Old Trapper is packed with protein. It comes in four amazing flavors to satisfy all your cravings. It's quality smoked meat at its finest, and it goes wherever you go. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're purchasing. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, be sure to ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? He was the former team van driver at Montana Tech. He is a friend of the program. Houston, 14-4, first place in the American. They're 24th in the coaches poll, and they're at home against UConn on Thursday. Kelvin Sampson is my guest. Kelvin, good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, always good to be on with you, brother. And all those accolades you called out, the one I'm most proud of is being the van driver at Montana Tech.
Well, I know that. I should lead with that. I should have led with that. In fact, Kelvin, it's good to have you back. I appreciate you. Let me rephrase this. You're in the top 25. You just had a big, big win over Wichita State. How is life for you and the family these days?
You know, having a granddaughter and having my family all together, Jim, as you get older, we're all in a rat race trying to do this, do that. As you get older, you slow down and, you know, you count your blessings and realize how lucky you are to be in a place where we can all be together. And, you focus on your family, man. So this is by far the best job I've ever had because of that.
I was going to say, Kelvin, I want to jump into the team, but you and I have talked in the past about this notion of you don't mess with happy. Because of the success that you've had at Houston, your name has come up for other coaching jobs, but you just said it. This is as good a job as you've ever had, and you've turned down some others since you've been there. When you look at what you've built there and the fact that your family is involved, how much happy is there for you in Houston?
I love it here. The facilities that have been built give us a chance. You know, everybody's as good as their resources. You know, and I've said this, 2 years ago when we beat San Diego State in the NCAA tournament, after the game, he's talking about, you know, first time being in the tournament in so long. I said that, coaches win games, but administrations win championships. You've got to have an administration that will make a commitment to give me a chance to compete. And you've got to be on the same page with that commitment word. You know, what does commitment mean to you? Well, here's what it means to me, and then we have to agree on it, and that's what we had here. You know, Tillman Fertitta, who owns the Rockets, made a tremendous investment, a brand-new facility. We have a beautiful – you got to get out here, Genesee. It's only 7,100 people, but it's a tremendous atmosphere. We've had great success there, and we have a beautiful just attached to it, we have a beautiful practice facility, development center that's got all the bells and whistles that you want. So when we bring a kid on campus, we feel like at least we're not at a competitive disadvantage like we were before.
You know, Kelvin, I do need to get out there because I've been watching you from afar, and the facility looks beautiful, and I love the energy, and I love the vibe. You're right. I do need to get out there. Now, on Saturday, you beat number 16 Wichita State in their place, 65-54. Any conference win, Kelvin, is a good one, especially on the road. But as Greg Marshall said after that game, quote, "Today they came in, and they just manhandled our team," end quote. You've had some really good wins in your time at Houston. How good did that one feel?
You know, I was happy for this bunch because they needed a signature win to put their stamp on the program. You know, there's been so much talk around here about last year's team, and you know, you get to a point where you get tired of talking about it because I'm not coaching last year's team anymore. And these kids got tired of hearing it because, you know, what about us? But at some point, you got to step up to the plate and make a statement. And that's what that was for this team. You know, we only have one senior. And we play a lot with two freshmen and two sophomores on the floor at the same time. So early in the season, we were trying to find ourselves. We took some lumps. But this team's gotten better and better and better. And, you know, he finally broke through. You know, we had a big win at Temple, big win at South Carolina, had some other big wins. But, you know, beating a school like Wichita State, because of the respect we have for them. You know, Greg does as good a job as anybody. That place is a tough place to play. They have tremendous, tremendous fan support. The environment there when we walked in, especially with them coming off a loss at Temple, that place was ready for blood. And we were the sacrificial lamb, but our kids bowed up, played tough, and got it done.
We're talking to Kelvin Sampson. Your kids did bow up. In fact, you said after the game, Kelvin, quote, "We played like grown men." Given the youth on that team, that is really high praise. What did you see from them that made you say that? And when a team plays, a young team like that plays like grown men, what does that look like?
You know, we always talk about attitudes. But I talk about behavior. You know, somebody that has a great attitude usually behaves the right way. And what I mean by behavior is preparation. You know, the way our behavior was in the days leading up to the Wichita State game, you can just see our maturity level. Kids were asking questions about this guy on the court. They wanted to make sure that this guy was, you know, we put names of NBA guys on our closeouts. Like if the Steph Curry closeout, you're all the way to him and force him to dribble. If it's a Kawhi Leonard closeout, it's a normal closeout. I won't say the name of the guy, but if it's this guy, then we don't close out. You know, they were making sure that they had all the details down. And you could tell that they were locked in. You know, we were coming off a win, a big win at home against SMU. And then, so we had 2 days to prepare. But right away, as soon as our assistant coach got up and started talking about Wichita State, I could just feel the vibe in the room. And so that was a great lesson for them. You know, early in the year, they didn't, you know, freshmen don't understand the importance of scouting reports. They're not detailed enough or disciplined enough. Most of them are coming from environments where those things weren't emphasized, like most college coaches do. So it's just a process for them, and that's why you just don't overreact to losses or wins in November or December, because they're all part of the process of getting you ready for conference season. And since the conference season started, we've just gradually gotten better.
We're talking to Houston head basketball coach Kelvin Sampson. And then, Kelvin, when you talk about process, you're also talking about culture, which leads me to Dejon Giroux, who had 12 points and 10 rebounds in the win and made the point, quote, "I thought we just played to our culture, rebounding and defense," end quote. So as head coach, how much pride is there when you hear players talking about playing to the program's culture and knowing that the culture is rebounding and defense?
Well, that also says something to the character of our team. You know, a lot of kids won't associate the way we won and the way we had to win to the things that we've been working on. He wouldn't have said that last year for sure, but now they buy in. Guys that are 10 toes in, they get it. They understand it. They know that this is how we have to win. Home or away, this is who we are. You know, our toughness, the way we defend, the way we rebound, that travels. And the way we shoot the ball, well, that's been traveling lately too, because we don't shoot it well at home or on the road. But just playing to our identity, making sure we understand who we are. And for a young team, they've done a good job of that. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not done with the roller coaster rides. You know, young guy teams, you look around the country, you see some teams have a great win, and they just have a head scratch and loss. But that's usually a byproduct of having young kids. But I just like this team. I like going to practice with them every day. We've got good leadership, and they're really, really fun kids to be around.
We're talking to Kelvin Sampson for a few more moments. One more thought about Giroux. Kelvin, he was getting some buzz outside the program as a possible breakout player this year, but then he broke his hand. What do you make of how he's dealt with that challenge, and what does he mean to your team?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Jim. He went 35 consecutive days without touching a basketball with his right hand. Now, he would come in the gym and dribble with his left hand, but that means he didn't shoot a ball or do anything at full speed. And it took, and that set him back. It set him back mentally, too, because when he came back, he wasn't playing well. And he still had the pain in his hand, which means he couldn't practice. Because all of a sudden, all of his numbers just started dropping. And that wears on kids. And, now he's at full speed. His hand is getting better. His shot's coming around. And that's allowed him to play with a lot more confidence.
You know, one of the things your son, Kellen, who's on the staff, talks about is the fact that you've got this feel. You have a feel not only for coaching but for connecting with the players. I'm curious, is it kind of like something like a gift that you were born with or learned from your father who was also a coach, or is it something that you had to consciously develop and work on over the years?
You know, I'd say it's a combination of all those. We all got help from somebody, and that's why I really believe in paying things forward. You know, we should live our lives to help other people. My dad was my hero. Had he been a carpenter, I would have probably walked around with a hammer in my back pocket. That's the impact he had on my life. He coached at a rural high school. He drove a 1963 Falcon with three in the tree, and he could get like seven players in that Falcon because as soon as game was over, games or practice, he'd drive them around the county to take them home at night because the parents didn't come to see them play. And to be able to do that, you have to have a special relationship. And then kids trusted him because they knew he cared about them. And that was the environment I grew up in. So I would say my dad really helped me a lot there.
Not only that, Kellen says that one of the ways that you connect with your players now is with trivia questions and quizzes. Like, what kind of things do you hit your guys with?
I didn't know you were saying. No. I just love trivia. I love history. Who was the first president of the United States to appear on a late night talk show? You know who it was?
I'm going to say Dwight Eisenhower.
Barack Obama. Barack Obama.
Wow.
So I like to pull nuggets like that. I like to read a lot, and I'll pull something. Make sure they understand national history, because everybody needs to know who the president is, the vice president, who your state senator is, who your governor is, who your mayor is. I want to make sure they know all those things. So if that comes up, they'll feel confident enough to have a conversation with it.
Hey, Kelvin, who's the tallest president ever?
The heaviest president ever was William Taft. The tallest president would have been Abraham Lincoln.
Correct. How tall?
6'4".
I'm not messing with you, Coach. I don't like that game. I don't like that game. You got it. As I mentioned, the coaching matchup is so good that each coach gets a take on the show today. I added a third guest. No need for you to keep soliciting. So the Chiefs are going to the Super Bowl for the first time in 50 years. And the guy leading them to Miami, to me, is pretty much impossible not to love. Of course, I'm talking about, two guys. Patrick Mahomes, to me, is impossible not to love. But what I'm talking about in this case is the one and the only Andrew Walter Reed. If there's one head coach in the NFL who nearly everybody wants to see win a first Super Bowl, other than Niner fans, it's Big Red. Hell, Patrick Mahomes himself said it yesterday. He'd be happier to win it for Andy than he'd be to win it for himself.
It'd be amazing, obviously. I mean, the work and that he's put in every single day. So obviously, we want to get him that Super Bowl. But we understand it's a process. We understand that first off, we gotta come in, have a great practice today, and then play great this weekend, and then try to give ourselves a chance to be in that game and get a chance to get him that trophy.
Would you be happier for him or for yourself?
I'd probably be happy for him, for sure. But, I mean, I think I'll be pretty happy, too, for myself.
I think if you were to go around that locker room, that would not be uncommon or unusual. I think they would be happier for their coach than for themselves. Dustin Colquitt said the same thing yesterday. And I'm sure there are a lot of other guys in that locker room who badly want to put a Lombardi in the paws of the big dude. Speaking of the big fella, Andy Reid told reporters after the AFC title game Sunday that part of his prep for South Beach included getting into South Beach shape.
You know, again, fired up to go to Miami. Need to get on a diet so I can fit in my clothes so we can go do our thing.
I see it working, Coach. You're not alone. We talk about this all the time when Super Bowl week rolls around. Time to detox. Time to cleanse. Time to get clean. Time to cut weight. Time to look your best. Because Super Bowl week is the one week all year long when all eyes are on everybody. Everybody's in the same exact spot, sizing everybody else up. Don't think it doesn't happen, because it does. I can totally relate to what Andy Reid is saying. I can totally relate to him saying, you got to look your best on the big stage. Now, I'm not saying that I always show up looking and feeling my best on that stage. What I am saying is, I see big dude working. I can relate to what he's saying. But apparently, Andy either has a start date in the near future for that diet, or he just set the world record for the shortest lasting cleanse ever. Because when he was asked yesterday how he was going to celebrate winning the AFC, or how he did, he said he celebrated like this.
Did you take some personal time last night to enjoy this accomplishment along the way? How'd you spend the evening?
I had a cheeseburger and went to bed.
I had a cheeseburger and I went to bed. Love this guy. Absolutely love Andy Reid. Hours after saying that he had to go on a diet, he happily confesses and owns ripping a cheeseburger.
I had a cheeseburger and went to bed.
Before hitting the sack. What a legend. Somewhere in Cajun country, Ed Orgeron is raising a ham sandwich in approval. And let's be real, Andy Cheeseburger is so much more authentic than Andy Kale Smoothie or Andy Salad. This is the same guy who once shared his 10 cheese Thanksgiving macaroni recipe with a reporter at the airport. The same guy who attacked a couple of plates of Mexican food over the offseason in SoCal.
I attacked a couple chili rellenos. They were great. Yeah, no, they were great.
I murdered a couple of them. I assaulted a couple of them.
I attacked a couple chili rellenos. They were great. Yeah, no, they were great.
I committed manslaughter on some queso. I love this guy. I love this guy because he's the same guy who co-starred with Guy Fieri at a Kansas City barbecue joint this year and brought his own towel to the taping.
Where are we going to eat?
We're going to a butcher shop that's also the greatest sandwich shop you've ever eaten at. The real deal.
What's it called?
The Pig Witch. We're sitting here in farm country and we're getting the freshest farm there is.
Are you hungry?
I brought my towel. I'm ready. Don't go too far with those fries. Three cheeses, man, blend perfect. How about the jalapenos? Man alive, this is the best sandwich that we've ever had.
As you can see, Coach is enjoying the short rib patty sandwich that he's inhaled half of it already.
Man, I choked out some short ribs. I stabbed some jalapenos. Like, bringing your own towel to a Food Network show is like bringing your own rock to the bowling alley. Am I right, Ike? Or your own stick to a pool table. Or your own darts to a bar. I mean, it just screams authority and experience. So believe me, I was a lot happier to hear that Andy was crushing cheeseburgers Sunday night instead of cleansing or fasting or intermittent fasting or eating rabbit food. It's who this guy is. It's how they got there. Why change up right now? Why change anything before the most important 2 weeks of your life? Diets can cause mood swings, irritability. Man, save that for the offseason. Now, I will say this. The only thing better than a cheeseburger after winning the Lamar Hunt Trophy is a cheeseburger after winning the Lombardi. So, go get you one, Big Red. And I think you know the perfect track for the occasion if you do beat the Niners in Miami. Diets can wait. Diets can wait until after the Super Bowl. And they can wait until after our next encounter at Javier's in Crystal Cove, Coach.
I love the place. I mean, I love it. And you said it. You always see people in there that you don't expect to see. I was as excited to see you as you were me. So, I mean, we haven't talked in a long time. And we used to talk all the time, and for no reason other than I moved back to Kansas City here, and it was kind of a new start. But it was great to see you, and your family's phenomenal. I mean, you had a load there now. People don't realize that table, that was a long table you had. You have a beautiful wife in Janet. Your son, he was beaming, man, 17 years old. It doesn't get any better. Living in California, eating at Javier's, 17-year birthday, and I mean, come on. How much better does it get?
You know what? I get this all the time. Hey, Rome, who's your favorite interview? What's your best interview? That one? That one? Andy Reid. How do you not love that guy? Now you see why other coaches love him, why his players love him, because that's the real Andy Reid. That's the Andy Reid you get. That was Andy Reid. And when he says, you know what? You say you were happy to see me. I was as happy to see you, Jim, as you were me. That's a lie. That's a straight lie. That is a lie, Andy. There's no way you were as happy to see me as I was to see you. And not only see you, but see you at Javier's. I love that he said, too, you and I used to talk all the time. And we haven't for a long time. The only reason for that is I moved back here. But here you are. Here you are at Javier's. And here I am at Javier's. Andy, you just keep doing you. You just keep doing you. You do you. You do it well enough. And then you become the best coach never to win a Super Bowl, who then has a Super Bowl and has punched a guaranteed ticket to Canton. He is the best coach never to win a Super Bowl. He just is. And I could absolutely make the argument that if he doesn't win a Super Bowl, he's still Hall of Fame worthy. I could make that argument. But there is no argument that he's not going if he does win that Super Bowl. I don't play favorites, but Andy Reid is not only one of my favorite coaches ever, he is one of my favorite humans ever.
All right, Jim, you're the best, man. Thanks.
No. You are the best.
Andy Reid went to bed.
Tough matchup, though, man. Niners are awesome. They run the hell out of it. They get after the quarterback. Kyle Shanahan literally is a genius. Not only in the way he schemes, but also in the way he leads and motivates. He wasn't getting a lot of credit for that. That is such a dynamic matchup. I love it. All right, so let's talk about a common problem for just 1 minute. The one thing that health experts, dietitians, athletes, and even top performers all seem to agree upon is the perfect diet simply does not exist. Even with a balanced, healthy diet, it can be so hard to cover all your nutritional bases through food alone. This is why there is Athletic Greens. The Athletic Greens Ultimate Daily All-in-One Health Drink has 75 proven vitamins, minerals, and whole food source ingredients, which make it easier for you to get that comprehensive nutrition without the need for a bunch of pills, powders, and complex routines. What I'm saying is, it is the most complete supplement for a better you. And it's different from anything else I've ever tried. It's different because it's delivered in powder form and it's mixed with water. Athletic Greens requires fewer capsules. It has superior absorption. It does not include any binders or fillers. One scoop of Athletic Greens provides a convenient, affordable, and tasty solution to fill the gaps in your diet. So if you're looking to boost energy, strengthen your immune system, or support gut health, this is the perfect product for you. Whether you're taking steps towards a healthier lifestyle or you're an athlete pushing for better performance, Athletic Greens takes the guesswork out of everyday good health. Why not try it? Jump on over to athleticgreens.com/Rome. Claim my special offer right now. 20 free travel packs valued at $79 with your first purchase. athleticgreens.com/Rome. We are joined by Steve Peichel. Steve, it is great to have you on the show. How are you?
Jim, I appreciate it. I'm a big fan. Very nice of you to have me on.
It's really nice to have you on. I've been looking forward to it, and we've got a lot to cover, you and I, Steve. So let me first ask you, you beat Minnesota at home on Sunday, and that was a significant win in a number of ways, which I want to get to in a moment. But you started that game by falling behind 10-2. Miles Johnson said afterwards, "We started off, we got punched in the face, and we got back up." End of quote. How much did your guys show you by how they got right back up and immediately went on an 11-0 run?
Jim, one thing I've done here, I've got punched in the face a lot. So my team responds, you know, just the way, you know, I do during the course of games. You just get back up and you go right back after the other team. So, you know, the other day was just a sign of that. Things didn't start off great for us, but we got it rolling. Other games, we've gotten off to great starts, and then the other team punches us. We've become a team that just continues to fight, and you know, just proud of our guys that they keep, you know, getting off the mat whenever we're down, and they just keep swinging.
We're talking to Steve Peichel, Rutgers head coach. And then when the polls came out yesterday, Rutgers basketball was in the top 25 for the first time in 41 years. You're like, I get that no coach is going to celebrate too much about the polls in January, but at the same time, when it's been that long since the program has been ranked, how special is that for your players to achieve that?
You know, I mean, it was a great, you know, just a great day. It's been a long time, and these guys have worked hard and sacrificed. We're in a great league, Jim, as you know, there's a ton of ranked teams, and, you know, to be able to enjoy that time with my team. I told them yesterday, you know, at noontime when I found out, I said, listen, the good news is we're ranked 24th. And then I said, the bad news is the next team we're playing is ranked higher than us. And when I got home last night, Jim, you'll appreciate this story. I got home, I said to my wife, hey, a ranked coach, you know, like a ranked coach. And she says, well, you're not even the highest ranked, you know, person in the family. And I said, what are you talking about? My daughter, Brooke, is at Northwestern playing basketball at Northwestern.
Wow.
And their team was ranked 22nd yesterday. So just when I thought I was like, you know, at the top of the totem pole at home, my wife quickly let me know that we weren't even ranked the highest ranked person in the family.
I love that. I love that. That is a great story. It's a humbling life, man. And you know, you married up and you married well because she'll keep you in line. Not only that, Steve Peichel, my guest, you were picked 12th in the conference before the season in some quarters. But if we go back to Big Ten Media Day, you were telling everybody, you know, I feel good about this team, really good about this team. What did you know about this group that maybe people outside the program did not know about?
You know, Jim, we've been working real hard here. You know, we opened a brand new practice facility, $100 million. Rutgers is really exploding as a university. It's a great school academically. We went to Spain this summer with my team. We got a little head start on the season. You know, we had a lot of different pieces. We were just very young. We start 4 sophomores. And they just had that quality, like that it factor. Like they wanted to be good. They had the good chemistry. And I just continue to remind them that we're picked 12th in one of the best leagues in the country. And that's what everyone, you know, thinks about us. And we could do something about it. Doesn't mean we have to finish there. And they've been working very hard, sacrificing and getting better. And this new facility has really helped us a great deal. And our fans, the rack that we play in is sold out. We're sold out again coming up. We have Nebraska on Saturday. Place has become a really, really tough place to play. And it's very fortunate for us because our whole league is tough to go on the road. And now the rack has become one of the toughest venues in the conference to play on the road. So very thankful to community students that have come out and, you know, making this a special, special year for us.
Yeah, to that point, it's not only a tough place to play, it's now a tough place to get to. Like, you've already sold out Saturday's game against Nebraska, and the athletic department is implementing an alternate traffic plan. Like, there have been times over the years where traffic was not an issue, it was not that hard a building to get into. So what's it like to have that level of support and that passion behind the program now?
Jim, I was so excited. The other day, I pulled into, you know, the parking garage, and I had a person trying to scalp tickets. And I took that as a huge compliment. You know, my first year, I'd be outside trying to give them away. Nobody would stop. And now I have people knocking on my window trying to get extra. And I told the guy kind of politely, I didn't have any. I wish I did, but I didn't have any. And he laughed about it. But it's become a real good venue. And our community has really shown up. And New Jersey's a great state, you know, as you know. And there's a lot of, you know, really good basketball people here. So they're coming. It's hard to get tickets, which I love. And our students, you know, make the environment really crazy.
Steve Peichel, my guest. Steve, let me ask you this, because you had a really, really good thing going where you were, and the reputation at Rutgers was, frankly, it's not just a tough place to win, but because you're in that conference, because you're in the Big Ten now, it's the kind of job that could actually wreck a good coaching career, and you were having a really good coaching career, yet you saw the opportunity. How were you able to block out all of that noise, or maybe did you hear people say that, and what was your response?
You know what? The jobs I've taken have, you know, all been jobs that I saw a tremendous amount of potential, but I've always taken jobs because of the people. And I love the athletic director, Pat Hobbs. He's been awesome. You know, he's an up-and-coming guy and really has done an unbelievable job of building the facilities here. And then being in the Big Ten, I'm up for challenges. I was one of 9 brothers and sisters, so every day was a challenge to get in the shower, to eat. You know, so I really felt Like, I had the right training with Jim Calhoun at UConn as a player for him and then a coach for him, building programs. And, you know, I really saw Rutgers. It's a great academic school. It's in a great location with great people. And it hasn't disappointed. The people here are outstanding and our fans. And, you know, so they took a shot on me and chance on me. And there were a lot of coaches that, you know, that were involved in the job. I told them I wouldn't let them down. And I've hired a great staff and I've worked really hard to keep that promise. And thankfully, my team is really responded and playing some really good basketball.
We are talking Rutgers basketball here in the jungle. You mentioned Jim Calhoun. You played your college ball at UConn for Jim Calhoun. And as you said, when the program won the NIT back in 1988, that was legendary. Obviously, the expectations have gone up a lot since then. But I understand what you're saying. When you consider where they were when he came in, like, do you see similarities between UConn at that time and Rutgers when you took over?
I do. And, you know, it's, you know, a great academic institution. I remember calling Coach Calhoun when the job was open, and he said Steve, he thought it was the toughest venue to play at during his coaching career, Rutgers, when it was rocking. And, you know, I always have a guy like that for advice, and I'm able to call on him. And I was part of the program when he was building, and then I got a chance to sit on his, you know, bench next to him as a coach. And there's so many similarities when you're building a program at a, you know, big state university that I saw him go through and the job he did, unbelievable. I remember the first time, like you said, winning the NIT, and that was the most exciting time. And then fast forwarded after he won two or three national championships, people were upset when he lost in the Final Fours. So I saw that build that he went through and, you know, was just very fortunate to have those experiences because they really helped me. You know, here at Rutgers, I've tried to build, you know, it similarly.
We're talking to Steve Peichel. We're talking Rutgers basketball. And then, Steve, sophomore Ron Harper Jr. leads the team in scoring. He's second in rebounding. And I want to just take 1 minute and say, I love talking to his dad. Back in the day when the Bulls were the Bulls, obviously you weren't going to talk to Michael Jordan. You weren't going to talk to Scottie Pippen. Ron Harper, though, was almost always available to speak. He'd come on the show, Steve. He was so great. I mean, and what a great player. What a great player. And so, of course,
people
you've got...
don't remember, you and I do. He
right.
was a fantastic player and knew how to play and just what a tremendous career, all the rings and, you know, all the part of winning that he's done. And I will tell you, his son is a winner, a great student, first and foremost, too, which I love. And he wanted to stay in New Jersey and play for a state university. And he's just getting better and better, too. He's, you know, he's a young sophomore. He's got size 19 feet. He's got a 7'3" wingspan. And he's just getting better and better and better. And, you know, he's one of the many great stories we have, you know, on our team with Jacob Young's dad played the NBA, played for Phi Slamma Jamma. So we have a couple guys that, you know, played in the NBA and their sons are great kids and working hard. And we got a lot of other kids that, you know, have really bought in and gotten better. We've developed players here and real proud that they've allowed us to develop them.
All right, so finally, is somebody who's turned around programs in the past or completely rebuilt it, what are the signs that you look for to let you know that the team is about to turn the corner or have a breakthrough?
Well, you know, you do have some of those moments. Like early in the season, like the way our bench was reacting to, you know, the success of players on the court, I always think is a big example because, you know, everyone can't play 40 minutes. And so when you have that guy on the bench that's playing 9 minutes or 10 minutes and he's jumping up and down when a player makes a great play on the court, like those are the things as a coach. And I show our guys in film all the time, like this is why we're going to be good because you are embracing the success of another player. You know, and in the world we're living in now, it's a lot about how many minutes and shots and my team has really been about they're happy when someone else has had success. And we've had 7 leading scorers in our last 9 games. So we come at you in a lot of different ways. And every time, hey, it's Miles Johnson's night. It's Ron Harper's night. It's Geo Baker's night. It's different players. It's Montez Mathis's night. Different players have had their nights. And everyone seems to be happy for those guys on those nights. And, you know, that's not always the case in coaching nowadays.
So last thought, Kelvin Sampson was on the show earlier, and we talked about that very notion, Steve. Like, in your mind, how important is it not to mess with happy?
Hey, it's very important. It's very important at home, too.
It's more important at home.
Happy.
It's more important at home.
Yeah, exactly. So we try to do that, keep these guys in a good place. We have a tough week. The problem is we play the sixth toughest schedule in the country remaining. So we can't get too up or too down. We got to just keep banging away and, you know, just excited about basketball here at Rutgers and excited about this university embracing basketball.
I love it. I love it. I love that you're that excited about it, that they are, and it makes me excited to talk to you about it, honestly. Rutgers, 14-4, 5-2 in conference, number 24 in the AP poll, and they're at Iowa tomorrow. Steve, great to have you on the show. Thanks so much.
Jim, thanks so much for having me. You have a great day.
So it's been a minute or two since I talked about Jungle Racing on the program, the Jungle Racing stable. We're not nearly as involved in the game as we used to be, but we still are. And we still have some racing interests, and we still have parts of horses. And then we have one horse that is a Jungle Racing horse through and through. So it's been a minute or two since I've talked about it on the program, but yesterday was a really special day. Any day we have a horse running is a special day, but especially in the case of a filly by the name of Gigetta that we have. Because Gigetta is family. Like back in the day when we were buying horses, we would buy them at auction. They're sales. And we dabbled in breeding our own, but we don't have an extensive or expansive breeding operation. In fact, we have like one mare at this point. So Gigetta is a Jungle Racing homebred, meaning we own her mother. Her mother is a horse that we owned that never ran. And we own that horse, and then you find a stallion to breed to, and then you get the baby, i.e. a homebred. And the mare, the mother, is a horse named Gidget Girl, and Gidget Girl's mother was Surfer Girl. So Gidgetta's grandmother, follow along, is Surfer Girl. We purchased Surfer Girl more than a decade ago, and Surfer was one of our first big swings in the game. Long before Misdirection and before its Share Belief, we bought Surfer Girl, and I'm not afraid to say it. I love that horse deeply. I love them all. I love the horse deeply. And Janet would say things like, all you do is talk about that horse. All you do is take pictures of that horse. Do you have any pictures of me and the boys? Love the horse. But Surfer got really sick. She had pneumonia and never had the chance to be the runner that we thought she would be. So we retired her. We began to breed her, and we had more bad luck. Like, it was just one heartbreak after another. There's so many stories. I'm not going to bore you with the details, but literally, we couldn't catch a break. Nothing good was happening. Nothing. Nothing with Surfer. Nothing with her babies. Nothing good. Just bad luck. But we never gave up on the family, and Gigetta is the daughter of Gidget Girl, who is the daughter of Surfer Girl, and Gigetta is the first one to actually make it to the races in the family. So that in and of itself is a win. No matter what she does, no matter what happens in a race, the fact that we actually got one of these babies to the races was a win. So she made her debut at Del Mar. And people who are in the game will argue about this. People in Kentucky argue for Kentucky. People who are in Florida will argue for Saratoga. Or I should say New York, we'll argue for Saratoga. You know, I'm a California guy. I'm going to argue for Del Mar being the best spot. So she made her Gigetta made her debut at Del Mar in late November, ran against a really strong field, and she ran well. She was in a really tough maiden race being her first race, and she ran third, but was running really well late. And she, quote, outran her odds, 16-1. So we were really pleased and really proud that our little Jungle Racing homebred hit the board at Del Mar against a field that included some really expensive horses. We were really proud. So, yesterday was her second race, and she was running at Santa Anita at 12:30 p.m. And again, she was in really deep. How deep? How about running against not one, but two Bob Baffert horses? And one of the horses was a horse named Merneith, who's a monster. And when I talk about a monster, how do you know a horse is a monster? She's never run before because of how she's bred, because of her pedigree, her lines, how much they paid for her, how well she's training, who she trains with, who her trainer is, all these things. She checks every single box. She's the daughter of American Pharoah. I mean, she's some horse now, a potential monster, like one of those horses that everybody already knew about before she'd even run. It's like any other athlete. Believe me, you know about the great ones. And everybody had been talking about her. And we're running against her. So I know some wise guys. Not many, but I know a couple. And some sharps. And they were saying to me, yo, Rome, You got yourself a nice little jungle horse there, Rome. Got yourself a nice little horse, but what the hell are you thinking putting her in against Baffert? What are you doing running that horse in that spot? Aren't you supposed to run them where they can win? Is that something you really want to do? This is not the race for her. You could probably run her in a softer spot and maybe get her a win. And I'm like, And the worst part is, I thought there was something in what they were saying. You know, by putting her in this race, what happens is, when you put a horse like that that's never won and that's young in against that talent, the risk you run is, not only does she get beaten, but it damages her confidence. Like any athlete with a bad beatdown. It damages everybody's confidence. And I got to admit, these guys, these sharps, these old school guys, they were kind of in my head. They know that when you win, like the horses, they know when they win and they know when they lose. I get that a lot. Hey, man, do they even know? They know. They know. They know when they win. They know when they lose. And they know when they get hammered, like any athlete. And it can't affect their confidence. So, point of this whole thing is, the old saying is, either you win or you learn. And my thought was, maybe we'll learn. Maybe we'll learn. Maybe it'll be good for her. I hope she has a good experience, but she's not going to win. But as a wise guy would have said, what the hell is she doing in there running against Merneith, who was going off at 1-9? That's the other thing. That one horse in the one post was 1-9. 1-9. What are you doing running her against a horse that's 1-9? I'll tell you what we were doing running against a horse that was 1-9.
The field heads around the far turn. Merneith lets it out a notch, leads now by 2.5 lengths. Gadjetta joined by Ream on the outside, Ream taking second. Then Drama for Mama and Princess Mo. They're 1/4 mile from home. Merneith in front by 1.5 lengths. Ream takes up the chase on the outside of Gadjetta, 3/16 to go. Merneith now asked to run, leads by 1.5 lengths still. Gadjetta is game between rivals and Ream on the outside. 1/16 to run. Merneith just in front. Gadjetta's going to make her work. Gadjetta's coming to Merneith now, and Gadjetta runs her down. It will be Gadjetta to score. Merneith was second.
What was she doing? She was winning the damn race. Our girl got up. She ran down a great, great talent in the Baffert barn. So it's not just that she won, but it's how she won. I mean, she was beaten. If you've seen the video, if you watch these types of things, like our gal, she was beaten. She lost. She was beaten. I genuinely thought that race was over. And I was thinking to myself, come on, baby, hold on. Just get that second place money. Hold on. It's a good experience. We're so proud. Hold on. Wait, what? Like, I can't explain it. Like, she found another gear. She dug deep. And I can't say anything other than it was really surreal. Like, I was shaken by the whole thing. Literally and physically shaking when it was over. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I was shaking. Complete goosebumps. Like, I'm getting them again just talking about it right now. Like, we've won Breeders' Cup races, plural. We've won Grade 1 stake races. We own the top thoroughbred in the world in shared belief. I was in my office shaking after a maiden win. And that's not exaggerating the fact. Like, I really thought we had no shot. I really thought she was beaten in the race. I thought that if we hit the board, maybe come in second place, that's a good day. Maybe we'd learn something. We did learn something about this one. We learned that she's got the heart of a champion. Again, not that she won, but how she won. How deep she dug. And the grit and the heart that she showed. Because it would have been so much easier for her to lose that race. It would have been so much easier for her just to give up and get dusted. But she never did, man. She gutted it out. Gutted it out and showed so much heart in coming back. And she won by 1 length. Like, that's a sport that's given us some extraordinary moments with misdirection and shared belief, some extraordinary pain and heartbreak. But I'm going to say yesterday was right up there with one of the best moments I've ever experienced in horse racing. Literally. A homebred horse running down an extremely talented horse that had been training extremely well that everybody loves. I mean, that was an amazing moment. And look, here's the thing. I want to be clear about this, too. Just because Gadjetta beat Merneith doesn't mean anything going forward. She could come up against that same horse again and get run right off the track. Literally. It would not surprise me at all. But for that moment in time, that was one of the most emotional and sweetest wins we've ever had. To have that happen with one of our own, our little jungle racing homebred, running between Baffert horses. By the way, I work with Bob. I'm partners in a horse that Bob trains. So that's the weird thing about that game, right? I'm running against Bob, and she's running her eyeballs out, and we want to win, but I do business with Bob on another horse. But our little homebred running between Baffert horses and then running down a $600,000 Baffert horse was absolutely surreal. And again, they may run us right off the track next time. I've got no idea. I have no idea what's going to happen going forward, but I already loved Gigetta before that race, no matter what. And I love her even more after seeing that kind of grit. You love to see a horse run with that kind of heart against anybody, but to do it against a horse that has as much class as the others did is really something special. Like Merneith, that was her first race. I want to be clear about that too. That was only her first race, and Gigetta already had a race under her belt. And Merneith is going to be unbelievable. She's going to win some enormous races. I don't know if Gigetta ever wins another race, but nobody can take that from her or that moment from the Jungle Racing family. We've won huge races. That was not a huge race. But I would be hard-pressed to say I've ever felt better in the game than I did after that win. That was goosebumps. That was so personal. That was neat. So if you were at the track and you saw that, we appreciate the support. And the most important thing after a race like that is, how did the horse come out? She apparently came out very good. Happy, was eating. That's always the first sign. If they eat a lot after the race, that means they felt great. Legs were cold, which is great. So now she gets some time off, and we'll see. But that was fun. It was good to have Jungle Racing back in the winner's circle. We have not had that in a long, long time. So big ups to Richard Baltus and his staff for having her ready. Joel Rosario with a great ride. And a really nice win. Gigetta, I'm proud of you, little girl. 1-800-636-8686. I would thank you, clones, for indulging me, but I was going to do that no matter what. He is Pete Prisco. Pete, how are you?
Good, Romy. How are you? You warmed up yet?
You know I'm starting right there, Pete. You know I'm going to start right there. From a California guy to a Florida guy, Pete, you and I can relate. You were in Kansas City. I was in Kansas City. Can you explain to everybody just how freaking cold it was?
What was it? Carbone from Goodfellas, who was frozen in the truck? That's what we were on Sunday. That's exactly what we were. My face, it took about 3 hours after the game for my face to start being normal again. It was ridiculous. That was as cold as I've been. I remember I was at the Packers-Giants playoff game a couple years ago, and that one was really cold, but I didn't have to stand outside as much as we did the other day. It was brutal.
It was brutal. Pete, explain this to me. Like, I understand that liquor has got something to do with it. I understand that you've got Florida blood. I've got California blood. But I'm walking around that stadium, and I'm like, these people, not only do they not seem as frozen as you and I, they don't seem unhappy. In fact, they seem really happy, and they don't even seem cold. How do you explain it?
Well, yeah, you're right. Liquor had something to do with it. We were there at 9 o'clock. I mean, I think you were there right there before us at 8 or something. You walk through the parking lot. The gates open. They had a waiting line to get in at 6 for some of those cars, and they have these, you know, fires and grills and everything else. I've been around this league for a long time. Those people deserve all the credit in the world for standing out there the way they did the other day. It was incredible.
No, they were thrilled. Pete Prisco is joining us. So when I got off the airplane, Pete, and we're going to talk football in a minute, but when I got off the airplane, the guy who picked me up at the airport said, man, you are lucky. Like, nobody can get in. I said, really? It was no problem at all. How about you? What was your trip to Kansas City like?
I was supposed to go on Friday. The flight was canceled because of the weather. Couldn't get in that night. Everything else was booked going in on Saturday. So I had to fly through Houston to Wichita and then drive to Kansas City 3 hours through the flattest land I've ever seen in my entire life. And it was capped off by getting a ticket, a speeding ticket in Kansas.
Oh, dude. Unbelievable. How fast were you going?
I was going 89 in a 70.
Okay.
Probably deserved it.
Okay, we were trying to get there. You were frustrated. Did you say to the cop, you know who the hell I am? Did you try that? Did you throw that card?
I didn't pull that card. I tried to tell him, look, I explained my day, what happened, and he went to the car and came back. And he goes, here's your ticket. Didn't work.
Nice try. Pete Prisco joining us. He's a senior NFL columnist for CBSSports.com. All right, so let's talk some football. Before the AFC Championship game, you expected the Chiefs would take care of business against the Titans. So what was going through your mind when Tennessee jumped on them early 10-0 and then 17-7?
Well, having been there the week before, I think I sat there and I said, okay, this is the exact same type of game. If any team can come back from this type of deficit and this type of start, it was the Chiefs. I mean, look, they can score on anybody. And one thing about Andy Reid, once he gets going. He doesn't take the foot off the pedal. He just keeps going and going and going. And I think that's the greatness of that offense. It helps that you have Patrick Mahomes. But I wasn't worried for the Chiefs. I thought the Titans were, you know, limited in terms of what they could do offensively, and I knew the Chiefs would eventually get it going, and they did.
We're talking to Pete Prisco. Like, they might have been limited offensively, but we saw Tennessee beat Houston, New England, and Baltimore, and each of those teams knew what Tennessee wanted to do, which was pound Derrick Henry, but they could not stop it. What was Kansas City able to do that those other teams weren't?
Well, they didn't allow them to get going. And, you know, that's the one thing when you talk to the Chiefs players before that game, they said, look, we can't allow him to get the head of steam. If you can bounce him and make him move a little bit, not get, you know, chop his feet a little bit, then you win. Because once he gets in the open field, big guy, fast guy, it's going to be a problem. And they did a good job of making him chop his feet a little bit and bounce. And I think that was the key to what they did on defense. Chris Jones being in there, and he was limited in what he could do, but just having him in there was big for that defense as well.
So, Pete, overall, the Kansas City defense, how do you think it compares to where it was earlier in the season and maybe with other Kansas City defenses in Andy Reid's time there? What's the difference?
Well, I think they're much better than early in the season because guys are healthy. You know, early in the season, Chris Jones wasn't around, and he's not all the way back yet, but he was a pretty good force on the plays he did play. Frank Clark was hurt early in the season and then got sick. They didn't have Suggs, who Suggs is limited now in terms of his ability to rush the passer, but he's still a really good run player and a tough guy to, you know, move off the point. And I think defensively those linebackers are playing better. Add it all up, and they're much more, you know, athletic as a defense. They're faster, and they're playing faster. And Steve Spagnuolo's defense can be tough on a young group, and I think they've adjusted to it.
Pete Prisco breaking it down for us. And then you've got Patrick Mahomes, who did pretty much what we'd expect and maybe even more. But if we were to go back, Pete, to when he was drafted, you were all over it at that time, and you said that he would be the best quarterback in that draft. What did you see from him at Texas Tech? Reed Mahomes himself said, look, there wasn't a whole lot of winning there. But what did you see from him there that made you feel that way?
That gunslinger mentality, the arm, the ability to make all the throws, the ability to throw it from different, you know, launch points, which is important. We've seen that carry over to the NFL. And, you know, he reminded me of Favre in that he would take the shots. And I talked to Andy Reid about that last year. I said, Andy, he's a lot like Favre, and he coached him. And he said, yeah, he is. And I said, well, Favre threw a lot of interceptions. And he looked at me, he paused, he said, yeah, but he threw a lot of touchdown passes too. And Andy Reid's okay with that. And this guy doesn't throw a lot of interceptions. He hasn't thrown any in the postseason. He's phenomenal, and I think he's only, you know, scratching the surface. When it's all said and done, this kid might end up being the best quarterback in the history of this game, saying a lot.
I think you're right. I mean, I think there's a possibility to that, and I think unlike Favre, nothing against Brett Favre. Brett Favre is Brett Favre, but I think that, like, Mahomes has figured out things already that Favre may have never figured out. He's cut way down on his mistakes already. Now, your other pick, Pete, on Sunday did not work out as well. You kind of have a bit of a rep now, Pete, for picking against San Francisco. What kind of game were you expecting from the Packers on Sunday, and then what do you make of how they actually showed up?
Well, they got trampled, and there's nothing worse than being a defense and having your manhood taken away by 288 rushing yards. That was awful. And I give all the credit in the world to Kyle Shanahan and Mike McDaniel, the run game coordinator. They schemed up a heck of a game. We know Mike Pettine. Mike Pettine wants to get in third down and get little and attack. And they attacked him. And they ran on third down. And they were just pushing guys off the line of scrimmage. It was a great game plan. I thought the Packers would be able to get some points early and kind of put the pressure on Jimmy Garoppolo. It didn't happen that way. And I give all the credit to San Francisco and all those 49er fans. They're nasty. I never knew the 49er fans to be that nasty, but they've been all over me, Jim.
Pete Prisco joining us, right? I feel you. Now, you and I have talked, on the other hand, you and I have talked a number of times about the fact that you are not a fan of drafting a running back in the first round because there are a lot of good running backs out there. Knowing that, how much were you smiling as Raheem Mostert rushed for 220 yards and 4 TDs?
That was fantastic. I mean, and give the kid credit for persevering and coming through everything he's come through, getting cut 6 times and then doing what he did in that game. And he's an explosive runner. And so, yeah, you can find those guys anywhere. And look, the 49ers tried to address the position. They tried to get, you know, they paid McKinnon a lot of money. It hadn't worked out. They tried to get Le'Veon Bell, didn't get him. That's a blessing in disguise. And now you just run these guys. And it doesn't matter who's in there, Breida, Coleman, you know, Mostert, the line is playing outstanding. The scheme is great, and those guys run. Don't draft running backs in the first round. Don't pay running backs big money.
Pete Prisco helping get us ready for the Super Bowl. Hey, Pete, before you go, if you're Kansas City, How concerned are you about that Niners defense, and what concerns you the most about that group?
Well, you know, one thing that people lost sight of the other day in the Kansas City game was how well their offensive line played. Because that's a group that had some injuries early in the season. They still are starting a backup left guard. But they played really well, and I think that's going to be the key. Because I've always said this, if you can block them, you'll beat them. I know Richard Sherman's a heck of a corner. He's a guy that, you know, excels in the postseason. But if you block them, you beat them. And I think that's going to be the key. Can, you know, those guys, Schwartz and Fisher, hold up against the pass rushers on that team? That's a big defensive line with big guys who can rush the passer. That's going to be quite a challenge. The other thing, too, Jim, Mahomes can move, and he's just scary. You saw that long laser throw he made to Sammy Watkins on the move. I think that's a big advantage for him and the Chiefs.
So, Pete, what about Richard Sherman you mentioned? If you're San Francisco's defense, how do you go about dealing with Kansas City's offense, and how worried are you about the side that is not covered by Sherman?
You know, it's interesting. They play a lot of cover three, it's got away from playing it exclusively, which, you know, that's the old Seattle defense and what a lot of teams have done. Gus Bradley did it when he took it to the Chargers and when he was with Jacksonville, but they've gotten away from playing most of that all the time. They do a lot of different things now. But I'll tell you what, if you look at some of the success that Gus Bradley with the Chargers has had against Patrick Mahomes, he's been, you know, one of those guys that played a lot of cover three and made him be patient. And, you know, big arm throwers like that don't like being patient. So I think San Francisco will play a lot of cover three and make Patrick Mahomes check it down and be patient. If you could do that and limit the big plays, then I think they have a legitimate chance to win the football game.
Pete Prisco, my guest. And finally, Pete, I don't suspect that it's going to happen, but if the 49ers need to pass, and they certainly didn't have to this past weekend, but if they do need to pass, how do you think Jimmy Garoppolo is going to fare against that Chiefs defense? Like, if they need him to make plays to win the Super Bowl, do you think that he will and can?
Well, it depends. Are they running it or not? Because everything I think he does in the passing game is predicated on their ability to run the ball. That's the greatness of Kyle Shanahan. He gets you going one way, and then you throw back the other way. How many times have we seen Kittle slip out on the other side of the backside of the play wide open? How many times have they slipped the fullback out over the years on the backside of the play wide open? You get him flowing one way, and you throw back the other way. He's great at doing that. He's also become a pretty good in the middle of the field thrower on those, you know, slants to Debo and those slants to Sanders. So I think he's capable of doing it. If he has to drop back and just, you know, down by, you know, 20 in the third quarter and just start chucking the ball over the place, I don't think that's a good look for him. But if they can run the ball and he can throw it, I think then he gets more than capable of making plays.
So, Pete, it's early, but you're already all over this. Are you ready for a pick? Like, if it's San Francisco plus two, who do you like?
You know, I haven't decided yet, but I'm leaning to the Chiefs. And, you know, I've heard people say that this reminds them of the Broncos-Seahawks Super Bowl when the Broncos had all the points and putting up big numbers, and Seattle went in there and just dominated them from start to finish. I don't see it that way. I think Mahomes can move well enough to get away from the pressure. My early lean is to the Chiefs, but I'm not so sure. I might not change that one. So
I get
San Francisco fans, leave me alone.
Dude, come on, be real. Is that why you just said that? Because you know they're coming for you again? You don't care about that. You're
no,
Pete
I don't
freaking
care about
Prisco. You don't care about that. You don't care about that. You're Pete Prisco, man. Senior NFL columnist for CBSSports.com, an analyst on the Pick 6 podcast, friend of the program, and it was cold. Pete Prisco. Pete, I will look for you in Miami. Great job. Thanks so much.
You got it, Jim. See you down there.
Good night,